Hi, this is Tom Crane, and today we have with us David Barsamian, who many of you may know, produces Alternative Radio, which airs on KKFI on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. following Democracy Now! What you may not know is that while David is one of America's most widely ranging and investigated journalists with the weekly show Alternative Radio, which is now in its 32nd year, he's also a prolific author of books with Noam Chomsky, Iqbal Ahmed, Howard Zinn, Tariq Ali, and Richard Wolff. And he also lectures on world affairs, imperialism, capitalism, propaganda, the media, the economic crisis, and global rebellions. On December 1st, he'll be lecturing with Kansas City's Friends of Community Media and KKFI at the St. Garbad Church at 4400 Wyoming in Kansas City, Missouri at 7 p.m. And he's going to discuss his timely book, written with Noam Chomsky, called Global Discontents, Conversations on the Rising Threats to Democracy, including the threat to us all of the consolidation of our media under a few corporations and the threat to the internet freedom we now enjoy. Hello, David, and welcome to KKFI's Radioactive Magazine.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tom. And if you don't mind, I just want to correct one thing you said, because I know you're not a native Armenian speaker. And that is, the name of the church is St. Garbad.
All right, correct.
Garbad, yeah, that's where I'll be speaking on the 1st.
That's correct.
Which is Garbad. A Friday evening.
Okay. Well, thank you for the correction, and I'd like to start out with a discussion of your new book, which is coming out pretty soon.
Yes, copies are in hand literally as we speak. I think some of the chapter headings will be illuminating for your listeners. One is called State Spying and Democracy. Another one is focuses on the Middle East, ISIS, the Kurds, and Turkey. Another chapter is Power Systems Do Not Give Gifts. I think that's really an interesting concept, and it reminds me of the famous statement from Frederick Douglass, that power concedes nothing without a demand it never has and it never will. So we have to struggle to achieve social justice and more equality. It's not something that people in power decide to gift us. We have to take it by coming out in the streets, by getting in the face of these people, getting off of Facebook, and in the face of these state legislatures, congressional representatives, senatorial, Senate representatives, all up and down the chain of political power. So it's being active at this moment and in being part of the resistance is very, very important. Other chapters are called Fear-Mongering, The Roots of Conflict, Toward a Better Society. Roots of Conflict is a kind of interesting one also, because our media, generally speaking, you know, the corporate-controlled media, the big conglomerates, ABC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, et cetera, they tend to focus on only four of the five W's, the who, the what, the where, and the when. But very little attention is paid to the why. We are now 16 years into the longest war in U.S. history, which, according to a report which came out today, by the way, has now cost each American taxpayer, since this is post September 11th, $23,000. That cost, the total cost of the so-called global war on terror, now exceeds $4 trillion, and that figure will reach $5 trillion by the end of next year. So the war on terror goes on. It's expanded dramatically into countries where most Americans, you know, can't even find on the map, like Niger and Chad and Mali. The U.S. has a very robust military presence in West Africa, North Africa, Central Africa. And the question goes back to why. Why is there so much conflict? What is the connections between U.S. policy and the rise of a multiplicity of jihadi groups around the world. You know, of course, you know, bin Laden is long gone. He ceased to be actually an operative figure. He was more a figurehead and a kind of, symbol of resistance to many radical jihadists. But now there are many more groups. And why is it happening? What is the connection? That's what the media leaves out, the why. And that's, I think, so important to understand.
Well, I've heard it said that perhaps the huge population increase and the global climate change causing desertification is probably one of the major causes, and it's being totally ignored by the current administration.
Well, it's a factor. It's not the, I don't think it's the determining factor, because the yes, there is a, of course, there's been drought. A lot of evidence points to the long record-breaking drought affecting Syria in the 5 years prior to 2011, before there was an uprising, which resulted in the movement of many, many tens of thousands of Syrian rural folk, farmers, streaming into the cities, Damascus, Homs, Aleppo, and taking up residence there and trying to make do and feed their families. This became one of the instigating factors in the uprising against Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian president. So yes, these are factors, but I think much more is U.S. intervention, the occupations, the unrelenting, I'm going to stress that word, unrelenting support for the state of Israel, not just economic support, which is, exceeds $3 billion a year, to one of the richest countries in the world, not just in the Middle East. Israeli per capita income exceeds Spain, Greece, Portugal, yet they continue to receive billions of dollars in U.S. aid. And more crucially, Israel is protected by the United States diplomatically and politically in various international fora. For example, the U.S. just withdrew from UNESCO, claiming it was an anti-Semitic organization. I can comment more on anti-Semitism if you want me to. A preposterous charge. UNESCO had just granted a heritage site status to a city in Palestine, Hebron, which is currently under Israeli military occupation, the longest occupation in modern times, 1967 to 2017. That's 50 years of U.S. 50 years of Israeli occupation of Palestinian land, seizure of land, a stealing of resources, particularly of water. And that just goes on, and it's become even more magnified under hysterically fanatic regime of Donald Trump, who's appointed a most unqualified man to be ambassador to Tel Aviv, David Friedman, whose main claim to fame is that he's contributed money to many of these illegal settlements. They should be called colonies if you want to have a clearer description of what they represent. So, these kinds of things are not on the table for polite discussion. As soon as any criticism of Israel is raised, the specter of anti-Semitism is hurled at the person or persons that criticize Israel, and basically all conversation stops.
Well, you said you wanted to comment on anti-Semitism.
Yes, well, it's an interesting concept, because Arabs happen to be Semites. But in the illiterate culture that we live in, people do not know this, and so Semite has been attached exclusively to Jewish people, to persons of Jewish origin. The Arabs and the Jews are, in fact, very close genetically. They are of the same kind of DNA, and so that is a tremendous misnomer to call Arabs anti-Semites.
Well,
and I must say, under the leadership of the current occupant of the Oval Office, there has been a marked increase in anti-Jewish feeling and expression here in the United States. And I'm not just talking about neo-Nazi torch-like parades with people holding machine guns in Charlottesville. But if you go to some of these websites, very interestingly, I followed some of them around this Harvey Weinstein affair, and you'll find time and time again references made to the fact that he's fat and that he's Jewish and that he's ugly. And some of these words are actually all, you know, in, like in a trifecta. They're all connected. You see that kind of hatred coming out more and more. Because, you know, again, the person in the Oval Office, I believe, is enabling this kind of toxic, you know, racism to come to the fore.
Well, recently we had an incident close by here in Kansas City where a gunman shot several people who happened not to be Jewish, but it was outside a synagogue, so he assumed that they were Jewish.
I didn't realize that. Were the people badly wounded?
Tom is referring to the Overland Park Jewish Community Center shooting that occurred in 2014. In that event, a white supremacist killed three non-Jews outside the Jewish Community Center of Greater Kansas City. However, on February 22nd of this year, a month after the inauguration of President Trump, a white American man shot two Indian men, killing one of them in a bar in Olathe, Kansas. Both Overland Park and Olathe are suburbs of Kansas City.
Yeah. And I think, you know, another thing that, you know, I talk a lot with Chomsky about is what's been happening in terms of class war in the United States over the last 20, 30, 40 years, particularly since Reagan, when the whole neoliberal economic agenda kicked in. There's been rising inequality, a flattening of wages, the greatest gap between the rich and the poor in the history of the United States. And Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once said, "You can have democracy in this country," he's talking about the United States, "or we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both." And indeed, with that great wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, the Sheldon Adelsons, the Charles and David Koch, the Koch brothers, Rebecca and Robert Mercer of the hedge fund, the head of Blackstone, and all of these gazillionaires that are supporting right-wing movements, right-wing media, right-wing think tanks, they have tipped the scales in terms of diminishing democracy. And I think for people who call themselves lowercase d for Democrats, they should be very concerned about what is happening. Permanent war, the ongoing growth of the military-industrial complex, the repression of voter rights, the introduction of all kinds of restrictions and legal IDs, all on the totally bogus premise that 3 to 5 million people did not vote in the 2016 presidential election for Donald Trump because there was, you know, some chicanery, skullduggery going on. These people, you know, did not vote for him. So he claims, and he appoints a presidential commission, wasting a lot of our money, investigating a phenomenon that is so isolated you can almost count the number of illegal voters on your two hands. It's a handful of people that may abuse the system. That's not the problem.
Okay, well, recently, we just had an election on Tuesday. What do you interpret that as meaning? Evidently, a lot of the right-wing folks did not accomplish what they were trying to do.
Well, I think there was a backlash. You know, people that are very angry with what's happening in Washington. Mind you, millions of people, mostly Democrats, did not turn out in 2016. They stayed home. You'll recall that every single survey indicated that these were the two most unpopular presidential candidates in U.S. history. And so I think a lot of those voters did turn out on Tuesday in Virginia, in New Jersey, and in local elections. For example, a Punjabi Sikh, a Sardar, was elected mayor of Hoboken. A young journalist in Virginia, her name is Rome, actually, she's the first openly transgender candidate to hold elective office in the United States. There's been a number of women were elected. This is a very, I think, important affirmation of diversity. Certainly one of the things that the alt-right is very fearful of, that, you know, the landscape of the country is radically changing. And so I think this was some, you know, some good results. But again, if, you know, the Democratic Party has a history of shooting itself in the foot. And,
yeah.
You know, if they do not listen to what people want in terms of health care, the environment, the preservation of Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare, all of these very important issues, they'll wind up on the losing side once again. But I think some of them have gotten the message. There's a lot of enthusiasm right now, you know, a lot of energy. I hope it's not all negative energy directed or generated because of loathing for Trump and his regime, but we'll be able to present, you know, positive alternatives, give people a reason to hope for a better future and a more equal society.
Well, speaking of his regime, currently we have an FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, and I think people need to know what he's trying to accomplish. Can you comment on that?
Well, he's one of the many unfortunate appointees from this administration, Scott Pruitt being another one, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Pai is totally in the pocket of the big media moguls. He is advocating, you know, the end of net neutrality. He's advocating more and more concentration. He's advocating the approval of Sinclair taking over the Tribune Corporation, which will make Sinclair, if not the biggest, one of the biggest controllers of local news around the country. I think it would make it the biggest by far, actually. So he's, you know, another disastrous appointment, but in keeping with, you know, Trump's agenda, which is about enabling corporate power, not people power. It's enabling profits for the handful at the expense of the majority.
Do you have any recommendations for some resources that will help educate people on these issues, such as internet freedom, which is also net neutrality?
Well, there's the, you know, there are numerous online organizations. Free Press is, you know, provides really good information about what's happening with the FCC and the commissioner, Ajit Pai. You can go there. You can go to Common Dreams, Truth Out, Truth Dig, Huffington Post. There's just a plethora of information, but I hope people don't get bogged down on the internet, you know, and edit their time carefully, because we really need activism. And simply, while information is important and to collect that information is critical, we need people out in the streets, you know, actively resisting the power structure. Else it's all for naught. And it's kind of, the internet is kind of seductive, you know. I mean, people think, you know, well, I saw this article, I'm going to forward it to my friend, and that's their activism. Well, that's not activism. That's just moving bytes of information across cyberspace.
Well, then what can we as citizens do to actively resist what's happening?
Well, there are organizations all over the country. I'm certain they exist in Kansas City. 350.org has a national presence. It's growing very, very rapidly. This is the organization basically founded by Bill McKibben, and it takes its name for the number of particles in the atmosphere that was deemed the critical mark in terms of reversing climate change. So 350 parts of carbon. And there's indivisible organizations all over the country. You know better what you have there in your community. There are local struggles to be carried out. There are state and regional and national and international struggles all over the place. And so there's lots of opportunity for people to get involved and to be effective. And I think it's important to overcome loneliness and atomization and have a good time too. Learn to laugh, learn to dance, learn to sing, but also be active. Art plays a very important role in activism as well, you know, and as Joe Hill used to say, you know, don't mourn, organize.
Well, not to be an alarmist, but maybe we should be. What do we have to worry about if what's going on continues?
Further evisceration of our democracy, a continued attack on the environment, irreparable harm to the environment, and catastrophic nuclear war. A miscalculation by, someone who conducts policy first through 140 characters, now 280 characters, is a recipe, it's a cocktail for great peril. Long term, climate change is happening. It's going to be extremely destructive. Short term, we're facing the possibility of a major war, which could involve the deaths of tens of millions of people. That's what's at stake right now. And we have a lot of bellicose talk coming from Washington, particularly from Trump. Incidentally, talk that's not shared by a lot of conservative Republicans like Senator John McCain of Arizona, Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, Jeff Flake of Arizona. Listen to what they're saying. I mean, these are conservative Republicans who are very concerned about the possibility of destructive war and the long-term consequences of that. You know, let's say there is some strike on the Korean Peninsula and radioactive uranium is released into the atmosphere and goes into the Pacific Ocean, by the way. What would be the consequences here in the United States and around the world? I think, you know, unimaginable. Not to mention the potential death of tens of millions of people. Seoul, the capital of South Korea, is just 30 miles from Panmunjom, from the DMZ, the 38th parallel, which was, drawn by the Allies right after World War II. There's still no peace treaty ending the Korean War, which was fought between 1950 and 1953. That might be a good place to start in terms of negotiations, you know, acknowledging that there is a regime in Pyongyang. We may not like it, but, you know, there are a lot of regimes we don't like, and there are a lot of countries that don't like our regime, by the way. And so that would be a good first step toward defusing what can only be described as a, you know, looming catastrophe. It's unimaginable that they're even talking about, you know, using nuclear weapons.
Yeah, it's craziness. And I know when people are going to come to hear you on December 1st, what do you think you want to say to them? What do they look forward to hearing from you?
Well, I think, overcoming despair and depression and being activated is really what democracy and citizenship is all about. And so if we are going to be citizens of this country, we need to make sure that our democratic processes are protected, that we don't have rule by an oligarchy, we don't have corporate crony capitalism running amok, plundering the countryside, destroying the environment. And by the way, this is like a little PS, and destroying the possibility of a viable future for our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. That's what's at stake here. And I think if people embrace that and understand the risks that are involved right now, certainly the most acute I've ever experienced. I'm 72. I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis very well, and, of course, the whole destruction of Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia and that whole period of corruption. This is exceedingly, dangerous, and people need to activate themselves and get involved. As Martin Luther King always used to say, it's better to be standing and fighting rather than being on your knees and begging. Power concedes nothing without a demand. Again, as Frederick Douglass said.
Well, those are very good things to remember. And I want to ask you, where can people get – let's give the name of the book again. Where can they get a copy of your upcoming book, and will you have some available at the December 1st presentation?
Sure. I'll have some with me, but they can go to our website, alternativeradio.org, and order right there, alternativeradio.org. We have probably the largest collection of Noam Chomsky audio and transcripts in the world. Or at least the known world. I can't speak about outer space, but we have a huge archive of Chomsky material. And a lot of other great radical voices like Howard Zinn and Michael Parenti and Vandana Shiva, Arundhati Roy, these wonderful voices, Naomi Klein, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, just terrific people that are out there whose perspectives need to reach larger audiences.
And the book is called Global Discontents,
right?
Conversations on the Rising Threat to Democracy.
Indeed. And so, the threats are there. The ball is in our court, that proverbial kind of comment. And it's time that, we realize what we're facing and become actively engaged in creating a more just and equal society, not a society for the one-tenth of 1%.
Well, just to remind everyone, David Barsamian will be speaking at the St. Gotabed Armenian Church at 4400 Wyoming here in Kansas City, Missouri, on December 1st at 7 p.m., and we're looking forward to that. And I'd sure like to thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule to spend some time with us on the air today on Radioactive Magazine.
It's my pleasure, Tom, and thank you for doing the program. And, a shout-out to KKFI, a wonderful community radio station where you can hear alternative radio every Wednesday morning at 9.
And I might mention you can find more about this on alternativeradio.org or our Friends of Community Media website, ourfcm.org, or KKFI.org.